Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 162. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brayden Oski.
I'm Austin Morales.
And I'm Luis Gonzalez. And oh my God,
we're in my bedroom!
And I'm back on the podcast!
Yeah.
It's been 4 weeks,
this
three
is revolutionary
weeks.
Here. This
I know.
Is crazy. We're like in another place. Austin's here.
Special South by Southwest edition. South by Southwest.
And on this week's podcast, we're going to talk about all the games we played at South by Southwest. Me and Brett jumped into Fortnite Battle Royale.
I played nothing.
Yeah.
Basically.
No, cool. I was trying to say Luigi, but I said Luis. We know Luis's penis size flaccid.
Whoa.
Sorry. Luigi's. And then Drake pulled in an ungodly amount of viewers on Twitch. And this week's discussion topic is about innovative gameplay mechanics. We're running down the ones we like, run down the ones we don't like, and we're running down the ones in between, I guess. Yeah, all those.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So good.
Thanks.
So
and
good.
Brett, cue the music.
Cue the music. I'm cueing it now.
Hey guys, this is Patricia Somerset, voice of Princess Zelda from Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and Ash from Rainbow Six Siege. Just wanted to say hello, and you are listening to The Inner Gamer.
It's March 20th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we'd love for you to support us on Patreon. For as little as $12 a year, you can make this podcast better, and we'll give you some goodies along the way. Now let's talk about some games we played. You guys ready for this?
Yeah.
Ready for this?
Where are we starting?
Let's actually start with South by. Let's jump in there. We were at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
Gaming Expo.
Actually, we're inside my bedroom right now.
We are inside his
we're
bedroom.
We're podcasting from the
first.
We're all on
first
the
first live
yeah,
podcast.
We're all laying down on my king bed.
All comfortable.
Just
Austin keeps him in the head.
Sorry,
Austin's
what?
Got bed head.
Oh, yeah, man. Austin's got bed head. Bedhead. I'm always happy.
Yeah, but
I'm just happy to be here, you know?
Yay. Louise, I'm going to touch
crazy.
You now.
This is the first time in probably about a year that we've all been in the same room podcasting.
It
probably
is.
Since last South by.
Yeah.
I think it was since last South by.
Did you come down? Or,
wait, no, did you podcast down here? Because I wasn't there for that. So did you?
I think we podcast from my living room. I'm pretty sure we podcasted from my living room.
I don't remember, man. That's bad.
I'm pretty sure we did.
And I'm the one with a brain injury.
I'm happy to be in you all's presence.
Yes.
Once again,
we're happy to have you in our presence.
Oh, so sweet.
It's so great. But we did play some games at South by. South by was interesting this year. But
yeah.
The games were interesting as well.
It's strange to me how, like, you know, they didn't really. I mean, you guys said last year there was a bunch of Switch stuff. Like, Switch presence was strong. And this year, there was like two aisles of indie games, maybe three, I guess. And that was about it. There wasn't a lot of any big announcements like you get at PAX South and stuff like that. That was kind of upsetting. But it's okay because we found some really cool indie games that I was really excited about. So,
which one was your favorite?
I'm not ready for that question.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I think Once Upon a Coma was my favorite.
Yes.
I'm really
great
excited
story.
For that. Once Upon a Coma is a single developed game. Well, it's made by a couple people, but it's produced by a guy named, I believe his name is Tyler Brush. And we met Z, who works for the publishing company. He was awesome, very sharply dressed man. Gave us all kinds of information about this game. It is hard to really explain. It's a side-scrolling adventure game with the art style of Tim Burton, kind of. And he says that you're a boy, but you're not really a boy. And the world you're in may not really be the world you're in. It's a really confusing
Honestly, when he
situation.
Told me that, I was like, that's kind of spoilers, man. Like, I didn't want to know that
it
right now.
Kind of spoilers. By the way, spoilers.
Yes.
It's a very pretty game. Very interesting. It reminds me of Night in the Woods, actually, but darker.
Right.
Kind of has some Limbo-esque in there with the kind of vignette features going on. So I'm really excited for that.
I mean, I think after this game, I mean, we see a lot of games where people are like coping with certain things. Like My Dragon Cancer was obviously about cancer. And then you have Sinuous Sacrifice that deals with, you know, mental health issues. And then
Celeste with depression.
Yeah, it's like all these, there's like a movement going on right now where all these games are kind of inadvertently coming together and creating, I won't say a new genre, but, you know, something that people can go to and really relate to, which obviously I don't think a lot of games have covered just more recently.
Yeah, it's a good point to bring up. I don't know, honestly, off the top of my head, any other, you know, types of themes that you could really approach that way. Like the one that sticks in my head is something they just released the sequel to it. It's a it's one of the story based games, came out on PlayStation with the two girls. Which one is it?
With the two girls?
Yeah, with the two girls.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I forget what it's called. Anyway,
where is it?
It basically it talks about high school, you know, themes, right? Things like,
oh, you're talking about
Life is Strange?
Life is Strange.
Yeah.
Like Life is Strange does very similar things, and that becomes relatable to lots of different people. And I think hopefully that continues on with stuff that's a little bit more, you know, intense, less grounded in reality, and more stuff that's like, for example, like schizophrenia, which is, you know, Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. Like, that's freaking intense.
Right.
What else could you do? I mean, there's themes that exist in the world that I think haven't been explored. So maybe it becomes more of like, I'd like to see something, for example, that explores, you know, maybe the struggles of an immigrant or something, like
that'd
almost
cool.
intensely.
Yeah.
Like a story-based narrative game that explores, you know, Hispanic Americans who jumped the border, or, you know, people who come from South America, or, you know, I'm trying to think. Sammy Sosa, I forget where he's from, but there's like this weird kind of, I think it's Dominicans, right? Dominicans, there's like a tendency to like bleach your skin, and like there's a whole story behind that.
Oh, wow.
And like exploring cultures in that way would be very, very interesting. And
yeah.
I feel like you're saying Once Upon a Coma is approaching that too, which is awesome. And
yeah.
I hope the trend continues. And maybe even some of these bigger games too.
I don't know, man. I don't think they want to touch that stuff.
Yeah, it's risky, but at the same time, I think it especially in this day and age, like, it's definitely, and it's weird to say rewarded, but it's championed. I think it's great that people are willing to listen to that.
Yeah.
And it's really timely to do it too. And then not just because people would latch onto it, but because people are willing to accept it now versus before.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah,
it is.
No, it's really interesting. And his story was interesting too. Z's, the guy, the publisher who was there. He said he came from Japan, right? Japan. Got some major accent, was in the hospital for 2 years, and then he came here and he was depressed because he couldn't talk to anybody. So he said that he'd play American video games. That's how he learned English. That's how he was able to start communicating with people. So that's why he got into video games. So to kind of
so he,
push
the
that
way
experience
he put it was
or,
a it's a way for like video games are teaching mechanisms.
Yes,
and
that's it.
Based on what you put in the game dictates what can be taught to a person. So you can teach them violence, or you can teach them ways to cope with difficult situations, and it's kind of up to the game developer to determine what that is. But let's talk about something on a happier note, like Battle Sloths. Like, we're gonna jump to that.
Yeah, Battle Sloths won an award from South by Southwest Gaming.
They
right?
did Gamer's Voice Choice Award or whatever for just any game in general, and it's published by Rooster Teeth, and it is a very cool game.
This isn't their first game.
This was their first game. Yeah,
Rooster Teeth games.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. That's what he was telling me. The team behind it's very small. There's not many people. I think there's just two or three people working on it.
And it was a game jam.
Yeah.
Like, they just did a game jam, and then it ended up being something big. Well, the story was that they premiered it at a bar, and one of the guys from Rooster Teeth Games, I guess, was there and was like, "Hey, we want to pick you guys up." I was like, "What?
Sloth's Pizza Chaos: The Great Pizza Wars is the fast-paced multiplayer competitive twin-stick shooter of your slothy dreams, and the sequel to Battle Sloth." So I guess it's the second one that they've done. And then you eat a lot of pizza, so that's cool. But it's developed by Invisible Collective. They're based here out of Austin, Texas. So that's really awesome. But it's a fun game. I'm glad that they won that award. It was really cool. And we're going to be doing some streams with it and probably having it at some events in the future.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's a blast.
Yeah.
And then let's see. What else did you guys jump into? I mean, I liked West of Loathing. It's already out, but I played that for a little bit. I'm totally going to download it. It's 10 out of 10 on Steam right now, and it has 1,900 reviews.
You were telling me about that they had like this small cult following that's kind of gotten them to where they are, but they're kind of searching for that next bastion. How exactly did they get there?
I think the way that they got there was through their connections that they have, because I was talking to one of the developers, and he and Campo Santo share a space, the ones that made Firewatch. So,
and their new game looks really cool too.
Oh my gosh.
I wonder if there's themes from that new game in this one, West of Loathing. I wonder if they talk about stuff like they share ideas.
Yeah. Well, this one's interesting. Like, we asked them about like the RPG elements and the story to it. And this one is basically, there's a story there, but the story is not important. The important part is that there's just a bunch of slapstick comedy strewn throughout it, and that's why people like it. Because there's your little stick figure that ventures out from your parents' home, and you're going west. And as you're traveling west, you encounter all these crazy experiences, and it's like a text adventure kind of game, but there's some puzzle aspects to it and stuff like that. Very, very simple, black and white stick figures, because that's what the developer could do. And he made this game that just is hilarious. And the little bit I played was a lot of fun. So I'm definitely gonna pick this one up, and I think it's only like $10, so it's not bad.
Yeah, check it out on Steam for sure.
Yeah. Austin, you played Dollar Kill Club. Tell us about that.
Okay, oh,
that's so cool,
dude. There was so I walked up and I was like, okay, what is this crazy game? They're like, oh yeah, pay $5 and that's your life. You have five lives, and then you can get money as you kill more people. I was like, what the? So obviously I jumped in there, lost all my money like almost immediately, and
real money.
They give you a voucher, you get in there, it's four one-on-one, 1v1v1v1, and you just shoot each other. You have a shield, get shot once, the shield goes away, you get shot again, and you lose a life. And it's really like, it's interesting. What, one guy won like 400, almost $500 from playing
yeah,
on day two.
He was dropping $5 bills. Our friend that was helping us do interviews, he lost, and then the guy with the $500 wherever his came up was like, here's $5, man. Take it. You got it. You can play another round. It's like, wow. It's hilarious. But
I think it's a kind of cool concept. For a twin stick shooter, it's so simple. And we talked about this yesterday, but this isn't, Dollar Kill Club is the game, or is that the service that they're putting behind it? Because it's not just one game that they're using this for, right?
Dollar Kill Club is the game that was created for Rumble Monkey, which is the company that is basically building a service that allows people to play games to win money from other players. So the way Dollar Kill Club was designed solely to demonstrate a real world experience, like a real world application of this software. And with this one, you know, you pay $5, everybody pays $5, and whoever wins at the end of it can get up to $5 more, like if they win. So the prize money is sent out to them or whatever. And they have Hearthstone as the first game that is supported for this, so that's going to be releasing at some point. But they're a brand new startup. They're based out of Seattle, Washington, and they're fresh into this, but they're trying to tap into the esports market specifically and basically help people who play games regularly, competitively, make money doing it outside of like standard competitive gameplay and tournaments and stuff like that. So it's an interesting concept. I have some concerns regarding the
they say
the security
of
it.
It's not gambling.
Yeah.
But it is right on the line.
Well, it's right skill-based, so it can't be gambling.
It's not by chance. It's based on...
Although I feel like you could game the system a little bit, probably.
Yeah,
you could probably be like, hey, dude, you get on that side. Let's take out this guy, take his $5, you take it this time, and then we'll put that together. We'll pull it, and then we'll divide it up between us.
Right.
Okay, there you go. I mean, it's a very small return, and obviously it's all skill-based, but...
Right,
yeah.
I don't know how it's going to work.
I mean,
especially with Hearthstone.
Yeah. I see kids getting sucked into this, just like loot crates, you know? Like, if I could just put money
into 18 plus.
True.
Yeah, that's true.
I wonder how
you're
going to have to prove
that. 18 is basically a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that too. Just put in, what is your birthday?
You have to you have to attach a bank account or, like, probably some kind of money transaction to it. Because what he said was, in order for them to prevent, hacking or people losing the game and then disconnecting or whatever, what they do is you put in your $5 at the start of the game, and then they deposit that to an escrow account, so it's in a neutral bank, and then whenever the game is won, so if you disconnect and or you like quit because you lost or whatever, like that $5 is gone. To know it doesn't go to anybody. So
gets to keep it.
Yeah, the bank gets to keep it basically. Yeah, maybe. I don't know that particular part. Actually, I didn't think about that, because what if you pay the $5? He said it goes in an escrow, so the money doesn't get released till later. So the idea is that you can't have people disconnect while playing the game out of fear of losing that $5. But if the escrow just keeps it, I mean, like, what if you really do get a lag issue? And then do you just lose the $5?
It's got to be tied to your account. I don't know. Honestly,
there's
got to
be a way they deposit that back in there. I don't know.
Don't look at the video explaining that, I'm sure.
They have a video. Go to RumbleMonkey.com and they showcase how you just win thousands of dollars. Like by
the idea is cool and unique, I feel like, but I'm skeptical.
Anyway.
I think it'll work itself out.
Yeah. They'll figure it out.
Hopefully for the better. Also, I'm going to get really good at it and win all the money.
Hell yeah.
That's very possible.
Any other games you guys played while you were there?
Yeah, your eye? You got one?
No, I don't. Oh, okay. I played more on my Switch while I was waiting around.
Yeah.
So there's this game called Air. I didn't get to play it, but I was watching it. It's very, very Journey-like, where it's just very serene. You don't die in the game. And the story isn't really told. It's not really like a story game, but there's story elements that you can go find and discover. But basically, you're just this girl who can turn into like, an eagle or something, and you can fly around, and there's like these islands in the sky, so you go from one island to another, and I guess you kind of just collect stuff and discover things. And
A-E-R is how you spell it,
right? So it's just one of those games you can sit down after a hard day's work and just unwind.
Yeah,
nothing crazy about it, nothing hard about it. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
The flying mechanics look really, really solid, very, very polished.
The team behind it is interesting. It's Data Lake Entertainment, and they are responsible. They're a publishing and development studio house. They have published games like, I think, Tales of Monkey Island, Divinity Original Sin 1, and a couple other games that I have forgotten. But then development-wise, they've done a few different types of games. There's one series that they had that starts with a D. I can't remember the name of it, but look them up online. Data Lake Entertainment. They have a huge array of things that they've done. I think since 2008, so they've been around for 10 years. They've been pretty busy, so it's cool.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I know we kind of discussed how the indie market is being so saturated, and I've noticed over the past 2 years that there are more and more games from Europe coming over here and like promoting themselves, and obviously we get them on Steam, so it's like they're partly flooding the market. I just think it's interesting how like all of a sudden this has become an issue. It's just there's so many games coming out. I mean, I guess it's been an issue for a while, right?
Yeah,
just me.
It's
am I just noticing it now?
Well, I think it's starting to get to the point where now that we're more involved in it, we're seeing it more.
Right.
But the Unity engine has just gone better and better. And that's what the majority of these games are built on, is Unity.
Right.
And it's just so easy for them to jump in there, throw a game together with minimal amounts of money, and then pop something out in a year, 2 years time, and make it quick and easy.
Right.
And Steam's doing a lot of green lighting of games and stuff like that. And I mean, I forgot what the rate is, but they're adding like thousands of games a year to the platform. So it is getting that way, but it's just every year it's getting easier and easier to have people get together and produce games. And that's why we're seeing a lot more. So,
right.
That's why
it's an issue.
Yeah.
I hate going on the eShop on the Nintendo Switch. It's just fucking, I want every game.
Yeah, well, one of the guys I was talking to there was saying that he said it's hard because there's a lot of bad stuff that gets on the eShop, and there's a few good things in there, but it's like there's so many not so good
things.
You're
gonna have
through
that regardless.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't stop that.
Yeah, you can't stop addicted to this shindig.
As long as it's not like iTunes gaming apps.
Oh gosh, at least they have a games tab now.
That's good.
In the iOS store. So that's good. Yeah. Anyway, so that's South by Southwest. Let's briefly talk. We finally played Fortnite Battle Royale. Well, I mean,
second time for me.
Luis has been playing it more than we have,
I think.
Yeah,
and I wasn't even here for that. I stepped out. I went to a South by Southwest music showcase, and they played Fortnite while I was gone.
As old people, we stayed in and played games.
Yeah, I came back just... it was ridiculous.
Yeah. So
what do y'all think about Fortnite, man? I happen to think it's better than PUBG. That's just me.
I'm leaning that way. I'm leaning that way. Partially because it's way better optimized. I mean, obviously, it's Epic Games. Like, they know how to optimize games, and it is a very solid platform. And the work that they've put into this, I mean, this was the first game that they built for the Unreal Engine that they built, which is now like the biggest, I mean, next to Unity is like the biggest engine in use right now and creating the best looking games. And the fact that they were able to do that and then build this, the Battle Royale part, in like 2 months time because of the work that they did and building a good solid platform to go off of, I think it's pretty impressive. But as far as the game goes, it's really, really refined. I think adding the ability to build stuff on the fly is a pretty cool feature. I spent a lot of time getting materials like brick and wood, and mostly brick because it's stronger, to protect myself in the event of an intense firefight. And the first time I died, I did not realize that by being inside of a building that somebody could just easily create a stairwell and walk right up over top of the wall and take me out. I was like, fuck, that was a mistake. But the second time I played, I got third place. So that was cool. So,
and I died like almost immediately on that.
Yeah, you
round.
Died a lot. And but yeah, I mean, it's fun. I mean, the map is nice. There doesn't seem to be any, that's another thing about this map, like there aren't any vehicles, but it doesn't feel like there's any downtime between areas. Like I feel like I can travel short periods of time and encounter somebody or encounter a place to collect materials, gather weapons, etc. And I feel like it's a lot easier for me to get loaded with a weapon that I care about than PUBG, where it could take me half the game to get a really good gun that will actually let me kill somebody. But I can kill people with an uncommon weapon in this game with little issue. So I like that a lot.
Yeah, the only issue I have is I played PUBG, I think, a year now, almost religiously, and I'm not even good in that, right? But it's so simple that you just, you know, dive, land, get a gun, kill people, right? Now this one is dive, land, get a gun, collect, you know, materials, build shit, and try to survive. Like, that opens a whole new concept of different tactics that someone would use. And me jumping in it now, like, you know, there's a lot of good people. I have to learn new things, and I don't want to do that right now because I'm just going to die faster. Like, I'm playing it like I'm playing PUBG, and that's an issue. Like, that's not how I should be, you know, approaching it, but that's all I know. I mean, PUBG is literally like, you know, muscle reflexes at this point. Like, I know certain things, I do certain stuff, and it's for me, like, I don't want to keep bouncing between these two.
That makes sense.
I like PUBG, and I'm going to continue to play it, even though it is the lesser of the two, but I just enjoy that combat. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Really, that's one of the biggest things that people are talking about now in terms of these two battle royale games, is they're so different. Very similar, but so different. I'd say Fortnite is more casual, which is why it has such a wide appeal. And not only that, it has crossplay on literally every platform now, even phones. And apparently it does extremely well on phones, yes, too. I actually want to check the iPhone store to see, or the App Store to see if it's like the top game.
Cause I think it was last week and it hit that point pretty quick.
It's absolutely incredible. But yeah, I can understand that. Like, I still like playing PUBG, but after playing Fortnite for so long, it's absolutely incredible to see how well a game can run if optimization was the thing that was...
Right. I feel like PUBG will get there at some point. It might take longer, and I think that will hurt it in the end. I mean, I don't know what they built, what the engine's built on. You know, I know it's not like Destiny where it takes literally like days just to do one correction. You know?
Right.
So, I don't know. They have a lot going on, and it's kind of stupid because the Xbox people, once they get 5 million... players or downloads or whatever, it's, they're going to release a jacket as DLC. I was like, what the fuck is this shit?
PUBG.
That's some bullshit. Yeah.
Fortnite's built to continually put stuff in it. Like, it takes no time for them to get new stuff up. And they're you know, already working on a new map. They can get that out quickly. Where, you know, I think PUBG is lagging behind and it's taking them so long to get things out. And not only that, because it's not so optimized, there's always issues.
Right.
And that might also keep it from growing as quickly as it needs to, because Fortnite is, it's like copy paste at this point and it's working very well.
Yeah.
And not even copy paste. Like, there are varied things with it.
And they've had more time to correct, like, fix that engine that they were working with too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, 10 years ago, 12 years now.
Yeah. But they've, Unreal changes every year. Like,
well, yeah.
Like, completely from the ground up.
True.
But, yeah, it's kind of cool to see. And I'm glad at least y'all played it so y'all know what the differences between the two are.
I want to play it more.
I just don't know.
It's fun, dude.
Just because, yeah. I mean, like, it makes me, except for Xbox, but whatever. But I can play a PlayStation now. I got to figure out how that works. So I did read that, which we'll talk about in the next story, but when Drake and Ninja were playing together, Ninja was on PC, Drake was on PS4.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. But, I know. I'm excited. I'm going to jump into it more. So all those people that have been listening to us that want us to play Fortnite, we're now playing Fortnite. Subscribe at me, dollar at me. Month. You can be part of our Discord channel and play with us.
Unhappily, we are playing it.
We are there. Anyway, well, that's gonna be it for the games we played. Stay tuned for our video game news. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It's time for our video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. And first up, we have Electronic Arts and Microtransactions. They're back.
No.
They're back.
No.
Devin's at home right now, just like losing his mind. He's like, where's my bourbon? Give me my bourbon.
We should call him and put him on speaker and see what he says. It's like, hey, dude, you want to be on this like small bit of the podcast?
Like, surprise.
Can't believe it. I actually haven't read this article. How are they bringing them back?
Yeah, so what's going to happen is, so when they first announced the microtransactions, just in case anybody wasn't aware, which I'm sure they were if they listen to this podcast, but the microtransactions were tied to everything that affected your gameplay. So you would get, you could buy star cards, which gave you incremental improvements to your abilities. You could buy new weapons. You could buy new heroes. All that stuff could be bought with real money. So everybody freaked out about that. Complain, we're like, no, this is bullshit. So EA pulled the microtransactions completely. So now the way they're doing it is it's back to the olden standards where you have a standard linear progression for leveling up your vehicles, your weapons, and getting star cards. So as you level up and play the game, earn experience points, that will unlock star cards, that will unlock everything like you would expect from Battlefield and stuff like that. And then the microtransaction component is you can use the in-game currency with microtransactions to purchase cosmetic only items. What those cosmetic items are isn't exactly clear, but they say it's going to be related to appearance changes and cosmetics for the characters. So I don't know if you're going to be able to, you know, wear a purple pimp outfit or what, but
imagine you could buy different colored lightsabers. That would be super cool. Yeah, I'd do that. I'd pay for that.
I'd like green myself out, just like have inner gamer everything.
I just hope there's one guy on the team who was like, I told you we should have done this from the start and this never would have happened,
right?
Like, some guy is laughing their ass off who was like that one dude who never speaks up but spoke up this one time before all this happened. It was like, we should just do like cosmetic things for this. He's like, ah, shut up, Tim, you don't know what you're talking about.
Shut up, Kevin. It's always a Kevin, dude.
True. It's always Kevin.
If we have any Kevin viewers, I'm sorry, but your name is definitely the one that people use.
Yeah. This launches in April. So
Carl,
right around the corner. But I'm glad. I mean, I still like Battlefront 2. I don't know if you guys are ever going to pick it up and play it. Before Monster Hunter came out. Yeah.
Monster Hunter.
Yeah. And then I haven't played that in a while either because then Deep Rock Galactic came out. And then Celeste came out.
Too many games. Too many. How far did
you get? Everything came out.
In what?
In Monster Hunter. I guess hour-wise, kind of.
I got like halfway, so I beat that first mega thing,
right?
I forgot what it's like,
the big
Zora Magdros or whatever.
Oh, okay. Magdros. Yeah.
And I was like, whatever, like that was a weird battle. I think I fought it with Joseph.
Very nice.
Then after that I played a little bit more. I got like a couple new armor sets, and then I was like, I'm gonna set it down for a little bit.
Yeah
It's fun to play with people. I don't want to play with me.
Sorry.
I think this works out for EA. I hope that they learned their fucking lesson, that's for sure. And obviously it didn't really affect them. It was just, you know, short-term backlash, and now they're just kind of on the hot seat. But I'm hoping that at least people will go out and buy it at a better price. I think it's like now $10-$15 now.
And you probably get pretty cheap. I mean, it's a really good game. I really like it. If it wasn't for all the microtransaction nonsense, there's a lot of stuff to have to manage, like micromanage in the game, just like the star cards in general, having to go through all that stuff. But beyond that, the game itself is really solid.
Okay.
I really like it. It's much better than Battlefront 1 was. Mm-hmm. It's fun to play again. Like, you have to play with friends. It's kind of like with all the other Battlefield games and, you know, Sea of Thieves and Monster Hunter World and Deep Rock Galactic and all these co-op games that are coming out or multiplayer games. So you got to have some friends to play with.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me, man.
Yeah.
But let's keep going with this, you know, good news. It sounded bad at first, you know?
Yeah.
EA microtransactions, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But at least they've kind of learned their lesson there. So let's
yeah.
Some more good news, man.
So Twitch beat a world record with Drake in Fortnite.
Oh my God.
Drake plays Fortnite, and he played with Ninja on, what was it, Friday night? Is that right?
I think it was something like that. And just a little background on Ninja. So Ninja has been playing Fortnite since like it started, and he plays for, I think it's Luminosity Gaming, and he's like sponsored by them. Like he streams for them, and he's been, you know, he's been on Fortnite for a while. This was back when PUBG was huge, back when, you know, Shroud was consistently getting like 12,000 viewers every day, like consistently. And then the Doc came in and started, you know, taking away some of that, getting 20,000. Ninja was just there, you know, hovering at that 5,000, 6,000 mark on Fortnite as really the only Fortnite streamer that was, you know, successful and doing extremely well. And then seemingly overnight, Fortnite explodes. You know, I think it maybe took 3 or 4 months, and you can probably go back and find articles that say 10 million more players on Fortnite, 5 million more players on Fortnite, and these are just like week over week. By now, I'm sure they're way past PUBG as far as, you know, PC concurrent players and even Xbox and PS4. And Ninja that whole time was just, you know, for 5,000 to 6,000 to 7,000. He now consistently gets about 55,000 concurrent viewers on his stream. Right now, he's probably at that. I don't know how much he streams, but it got to the point where he was getting reached out to by guys like Drake, Travis Scott, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster, who plays football for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Although I think he's a free agent now, so he may not play there anymore. Anyway, they're reaching out to him because they see his stream and he's absolutely incredible at the game. Like, absolutely insane. And then Drake was like, hey, let's play.
Yeah. 600,000 people tuned in. 600,000 people were there.
I wonder if they have an alarm system where it's like, oh shit, it's getting up there. Like servers are going crazy, getting on
fire. Imagine
how
that works. Yeah, that's probably what happened. And for some perspective, the record before the last record was 388,000, which was when Dr. Disrespect made his re-debut after he like cheated on his wife or whatever, and like he did that extremely well too. And he's actually switching over to Fortnite because PUBG is just not very well optimized.
No,
388,000 people tune in for that. Before that was the return of LOL Tyler One, who was a dominant League of Legends streamer for a while until he kept getting banned for, you know, throwing games and getting upset, and Riot was just like, fuck you, we're never gonna let you play this game ever again. And then they lifted that ban after a couple of years, and his return to streaming garnered like 250,000.
Oh, I remember that
was
happening.
Like, in the middle of last year.
Yeah.
So from in less than a year, the record for the most Twitch streamer or the Twitch concurrent viewers was shattered. And I think it topped out at almost 700,000. And because Drake likes to freaking play it. And he tweeted about it too. And the tweet, we're looking at it now, 330,000 likes and 150,000 comments. Insane. Yeah. It destroyed Twitter.
What era are we living in right now? This is just mind blowing.
I love it.
That's crazy.
No, it's good. It's really good.
They said Drake was really good, and he only has been playing for about a month, which is pretty cool. So he's digging it.
Gaming has become mainstream. Like, I don't know, is it?
Well, it's been mainstream for a while. It's just now people are okay saying that they're gamers, you know, and they have platforms to do it.
Right.
And what's even crazier is they, on this article, I think, they have other celebrities that have tweeted about Fortnite. Roseanne Barr tweeted about it and said she's won. She's gotten a not chicken dinner. She's gotten Victory Royale like 20 times. Roseanne Barr.
Wow.
She tweeted about it.
Well, Travis Scott was playing this night too, which was crazy.
Yeah, all of them jumped on, and there was a whole bunch of people.
Smith.
Yeah, and Kim.com was playing for a while there, and apparently they've streamed together before. But it's honestly extremely motivating for gamers, you know, to see something like this, to see people kind of latch on. And I think it's very possible that Ninja is now the only Twitch streamer ever to have a subscriber level that gives him $1 million a month, like in subscription revenue.
That's amazing.
The dude's like, what a life. The dude's intense, man. Like, you need to watch him. Like, he really is, he's something to watch.
Watch him right now.
He's and like listening into him, like the way he talks, like as good as he is, it's crazy, man. But Drake, of all people, too, easily the most popular rapper in the world right now.
He only has 36.7 million followers. So
on Twitter?
It's not bad. Yeah. Yeah. Easy.
God's plan.
Yep. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome. And it was on Thursday. It was, I had to correct myself. It was on Thursday, not Friday.
We were all laying down in bed. I'm like, oh my God, Drake is playing Fortnite?
It was amazing.
It's like, how did I miss it, too? Because I have his tweets come to my phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know how I missed it.
So, to piggyback off of that,
Twitch
is also upgrading their Prime subscription service. So, previously, if you have Amazon Prime, or if you just have Twitch Prime, because Amazon owns Twitch, you would get free in-game items, you would get ad-free content, streaming, different things like that. Well, now, starting on March 15th, which was actually, as the time you listen to this podcast, was 5 days ago, they're going to give away free PC games every month as a Prime subscriber. So, all you have to do is be a subscriber. You can go on there and you can pick from a selection of games. In March, the games listed are Superhot, Shadow Tactics, Tales from Candle Keep, Oxenfree, and Mr. Shifty. And next month, free games with Prime will offer Tales from the Borderlands, SteamWorld Dig 2, Kingsway, Tokyo 42, and Dub Wars. So,
Games are great.
Yeah. You can keep them forever as well. It doesn't say specifically here if it's you get all of those to pick to get, or if it's just one, but I'm pretty sure it's just one you can choose.
I'm glad I have about Super Hot, and this is a great addition. I mean, man,
Super Hot.
So how much do you have to pay across all consoles to get something free every month?
You have to pay, so it's $100 for Twitch Prime. Isn't it like $69.99? I think
$100
for
a
PlayStation?
Year?
Yeah, $100 a year. So it's like 70, I think it's like 50, like $60 to $70 for Xbox and PlayStation. So put all that together, you're looking at under $300 to get 12.
How much
times
you have to pay
three
a year?
Is
right,
36
a month. That's what I'm going for.
I don't know. For less than $300, you get about 36 free games.
How much is
at
the
least
PlayStation?
36 free games? Huh? I don't know. I'm just throwing numbers out there, man.
Okay. Do you know how much you pay for PlayStation subscription?
$60
a year?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, $60 for a year.
Okay. Well, it's not a lot. You'd pay, if you bought every subscription there was, you get one free game. Oh, no, you can get multiple free games, technically.
Right.
PlayStation, you get two. I don't know how Xbox does it. I assume they give a rate like
Xbox
three
you get
or
like
so.
Three or four.
Yeah.
Because you get two Xbox One games and you get two or three Xbox 360 games.
So for about the price of most likely two games a year, you can get a plethora of games a month and the whole year. Anyway. I think that's pretty cool. Just adding on, if
the
you're
three of those
into
together
that.
Is $18.30 a month, and you're getting roughly you're getting at least five games a month. So
yeah,
that breaks
like that.
Down to $3.60 per game. Not bad.
That's bad. That's badass,
service.
Man. Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, that's really good.
So there you go. Twitch is getting cooler. And it's going crazy. So E3 news is coming out a lot, actually. And I mean, E3 is going to be interesting this year. I'm really curious to see where it goes, because we've already heard, like, Xbox last year brought up Project Scorpio. It's a brand new 4K console, but there wasn't any games for it, really. You had third-party games, and that was about it. Xbox has come out and said that for the E3 press conference, they are going to have their, quote, biggest showing ever, and they are not going to be in the Los Angeles Convention Center like they have been in years past. Instead, they're going to move their entire production to the Microsoft Theater in LA Live. So not only is the
Very nice.
Like showing going to be there, but actually the places where you play games mm-hmm. is going to be there as well. So they're going to have their own space dedicated to Microsoft as opposed to being in the main arena space.
I think that's good for them. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's good for anyone who doesn't want to be on that site, because it's just so much going on there. But I hope this is their year. I hope this is their you know, stake in the ground, being like, look, we're doing something with this, because I want them to make me want to buy an Xbox. That's what I want. I don't want to spend any more money, but I mean, if they can make that happen,
I don't know if you need an Xbox. I'll be happy. Just play anywhere.
That's true. Well, I know, but like, I want them to sell the Xbox like that. Like, yeah. You know, when the 360 came out, it's like, damn, I need a 360. You know, I cannot go on with my life without buying one to play with my friends and stuff like that. And at this point, you don't really need one.
So rumor has it that we may see a Halo announcement. We also may see a PlayStation Now like game streaming service where you can stream games through their platform. But I think what's smart about what they're doing is that they're building the ecosystem around the fact that you can do what Fortnite does. Well, hopefully they open up Fortnite to Xbox. But if you buy your game on Xbox, you can play it on your PC and vice versa. It doesn't really matter where you get your game. Those games go with you on any Windows platform that you're using. So there's a lot of power in that, because it doesn't require people to buy the console anymore. But it still requires them to use the ecosystem that they've built.
So then why not just make a cheaper console to begin with if the more powerful one is the PC? I don't know. I mean, I guess the more powerful Xbox.
It's for the convenience of like plug and play.
Yeah, I guess so. You don't have to build it. Yeah, people don't want to. And it's a little more expensive too. You're not spending $2,300
exactly
to build something.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the Scorpio is $499. Yeah, I mean that's $500 for like a 4K gaming machine.
Yeah, true.
You just need a TV for it.
Yeah,
done. So that's pretty good. But I'm excited. I mean, E3 is gonna be huge this year. We're not gonna be there probably, but it's gonna be huge. Yeah. I would like to be there, but I can't. But you guys can go.
We don't want to wait in lines.
You guys should go.
Let's just say that.
Right?
Well, they actually changed the format. So if you don't buy a general admission ticket, which I think y'all probably would have had to. Well, maybe not you, Brett. But, we probably could have tried as TIG to get in there.
Yeah.
But they are opening up to exhibitors 2 hours early, and then everyone else gets in later. So that means you have 2 hours to get in the lines you want and get to do the cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
That is nice. Well, shit. Next year. We'll try next year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right. So next story we have is actually a three-part story, but it's going to be really quick. So there's been two leaks and one officially confirmed conversation about a game. So we've already talked about all the other things that are coming out this year. There's obviously a lot of stuff, but there are some retail ads that have given reason to believe that Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell is coming out in 2018, and that we're going to see a Modern Warfare 2 remastered coming out in 2018.
Ooh.
Yes. And then confirmed, first leaked and now confirmed, is Shadow of the Tomb Raider, the third installment in the Tomb Raider series.
Mm. Anyone else play the last one?
Yeah, it was good.
Rise of Tomb Raider? Oh, it was so good. Story was good. It wasn't like great, but I think the cinematics and all that were really, really awesome. Mechanics are pretty solid.
Yeah.
For those who haven't played it.
I want to play it really bad. It's pretty
on your, if you had a 1080, Brett, it looked really pretty on your 4K monitor.
It's not 4K, it's a 2K.
Your ultra ride. HD,
it's 2K, 3K,
Super HD, whatever.
It's something like that.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna keep giving crap about that.
I know
it's gonna keep happening. But yeah, no, it's gonna be cool. And they're not doing it, which I'm really glad about. This, they're not doing a time release anymore. So when it comes out, it's coming out on Xbox, PC, and PlayStation. So you're not gonna get Xbox exclusivity for a year like they had before, which I think kind of hurt them a little bit.
Yeah.
So that'll be good. Yeah, so next conversation we have is going to be on Arlington, Texas, our hometown. Well, mine and Austin's hometown. And
I've never even been there. I've been there.
Yeah. So Arlington, Texas, for those that don't know, is smack dab in between Dallas and Fort Worth, Texas. And Arlington is home to the Dallas Cowboys Stadium and the Texas Rangers Stadium.
Six Flags is there too.
And Six Flags over Texas, yes.
It's like the greatest like 1 mile radius of all time.
It's the craziest thing.
No, it's an AT&T Center or something now. It's no longer Texas Ranger Stadium.
AT&T Stadium, whatever. It's a Dallas. Well, oh, you mean the Texas Stadium?
Yeah, Texas Stadium.
What is it called?
It's like the AT&T something.
AT&T also?
Yeah.
I thought it was Globe Life or something. I don't know.
It's something like that.
It used to be like Globe Life Park, but
I don't remember. Anyway.
Well, so Arlington has confirmed that they are building the largest esports stadium in the United States in the heart of Arlington, Texas.
I bet it's going to be a mile away from all that, too.
It probably is. Like, traffic is already bad.
I know.
It's going to get
They really got to fix 360 right there. 360 is like the highway that's right next to all these stadiums. And it's like the most under construction and always backed up no matter what. So
that's
good luck getting there.
So this state-of-the-art stadium is going to be 100,000 square foot space, and it's going to be the most flexible esports stadium in the country. It will open in the it's in the entertainment district, so it's going to be in the downtown area.
Yeah,
it is going to include $10 million investment, so it's going to be crazy expensive, and it's going to allow for up to 1,000 spectators and have VIP amenities and year-round event potential. They are...
1,000-seater? That's the biggest esports that we can have in America?
Well, that's the biggest now, but...
Oh, man.
It's not terrible.
It's good. Yeah. I would think you'd want more, though.
Eventually, yeah. I don't know.
Sorry, it just sounds low.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, it's... Some concert venues, like...
I guess you'd be more tuning in during the stream than they would actually attend.
Yeah. I think this is like the start of it, and then I'm sure we'll get more as time goes on. Like, what's the Blizzard Arena out in L.A.?
What do you mean?
The seating
there? Oh, it's just like a studio, dude. I think it's like 150 people, maybe.
Really?
Yeah, and it's...
I thought it was going to be huge.
No, it's one little baby location. It's just a studio. Man. It's not an arena. So it's not meant to house... Like, this is supposed to be a place that can house... like League of Legends tournaments. It can house
450
like
people at the Blizzard Arena.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so this is double at least.
So do they? So right now, do some like go out and just go to like actual stadiums and like, hey, come and fill these seats? Because I've seen it where it's like gobs of people watching one little thing. You know, I'm just like, geez.
And they fill out those. I mean, they'll like cut them in half, or sometimes they'll fill out the whole thing. And
right.
There's huge showings for stuff like that, and if it ever got to be that big, well, then they would just say, okay, hey, we're going to host a League of Legends tournament in AT&T Stadium, which I think has actually happened already.
Okay. That makes sense then.
And then they can just sell out whatever seats they need to. And that's, you know, thousands and thousands of people.
Okay.
But 1,000 seems about right for really every type of esport right now.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So they said in 2017, the global esports market was valued at nearly $493 million. By 2020, it's expected to be a $1.5 billion industry. So it's growing very, very rapidly. But this is like the first step in what we're going to expect from esports, to kind of get a feel for where things are going to go, how it's going to develop and everything like that. But they have all the right pieces in place to where, you know, you can literally, I mean, this is... an arena. This is a place that it's a destination. It's not a big arena, but it's definitely a destination because I know that for comparison, House of Blues holds about 2,000 people. So it's going to be smaller in terms of capacity than that, but that's still pretty awesome. And with a VIP treatment and stuff like that, like this is becoming like a real sport venue.
Oh yeah.
Facility. So
I think it's a great place because like the last year I've heard multiple times UTA and esports of some sort.
Yeah.
Like coming up in conversation.
Which is also in Fort Worth. It does.
Right.
Has an esports team.
Yeah.
That they're building.
I don't know what the esports scene is like down here. Like in terms of,
like in Austin in general,
like UT being
has like esports stuff that they do. Like they have like, I'm pretty sure they have a Rocket League team, but it's not as big as like Arlington or anything like that. I think that comes down to what programs they offer as a university, but a lot of universities offer that kind of stuff. And I imagine now that this is going to be there, that UT Arlington is going to be the biggest, if not the biggest place to go for esports. Like that's becoming a thing that people give scholarships out for.
That's pretty awesome, actually. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, that's, wow. It's everywhere now. Like
gaming is changing lives.
So last story we have. This is a very, very near and dear to my heart. We now know how tall Bowser, Peach, and everybody is based on the size of Luigi's penis.
Flaccid penis.
Flaccid penis.
This is my favorite part of the internet. Always.
Oh yeah. So this is an article we found on Kotaku, and there was a Twitter user who goes by the name of Mitt Thrill Bowtie, and he determined based on some quick math and the size of this illustration from marketing that came out that his flaccid penis was about 3.6 7 inches long, and that makes him about 3.5 feet tall. No, his penis is 3.7 inches long. But then they use that math to determine the height of everybody else based on the standard size of a normal tennis racket. So they compared the penis size to the tennis size and did some algebra to figure out what the scale is of these.
So they just took like a basic measurement of the tennis racket and then compared it to the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Because like a standard tennis racket is like between 27 and 29 inches long. And so it's about 300 pixels on the picture. So that gives you the rough estimate of
wow.
his penis. So in comparison, Peach is 3 foot, 3 inches tall. And we have Toad coming at a mere 29.2 inches tall, which is only an inch taller than the tennis racket itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mario's mustache
it's
is a foot long.
It's like a foot long sandwich.
That's amazing.
And then Bowser is roughly, this was hard for them to figure out because of the fact that he was like crouched down and stuff like that. But Bowser is about 3 foot, 11 inches tall. So he's the size of a large child. So you could totally smack down Bowser in a fight. I mean, let's be real.
He could throw some weight around.
Yeah. So that was just hilarious. I thought that was pretty fun, dude.
All because thanks,
of,
Luigi.
And all because of Luigi's penis. Your
flaccid penis. I mean, who goes into this? Like,
this is the best thing
that
that's
out.
Happened in games in a while. This is so great. I'm just going to start using that measurement for everything now.
Yeah, you
measure
should.
Other people.
Yeah. Forgot the height and the ratio and the depth.
I wonder what Miyamoto thinks of this.
Oh, gosh. Probably like,
how do they know? How do they do it?
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so that's going to be it for our gaming news this week. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. You can email us at hello@dinnergamer.net, and we will talk about it next week. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, please give us a review and rating on iTunes. It'll help us grow. We'll be back after the break with our discussion topic, so stay tuned.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Our discussion this week is going to be on innovative gameplay mechanics. There will not be a video this week, as Austin has asked me to say to everybody, but that's because we're in South by Southwest and we are doing a mobile setup this week, which is long, long, far away. It's 3 hours away from our land, our homes, our places, but we're at Louise's home and it's really awesome.
I haven't set up a studio here yet, but once we do, we will always have a video.
Oh, hell yeah.
That'd be
always,
awesome.
Always video of our bikinis and things.
Yeah.
Just
kidding. Ludes.
Just kidding. Anyway, so we're going to talk about some innovative gameplay mechanics today. So games have evolved, obviously, extensively over the years. From the introduction of things like autosave to the implementation of weapon degradation with survival types games, mechanics have changed the way we game over time. So we just want to explore that a little bit and discuss different things that have happened, why or how they changed the game, and then maybe give some examples of either the first game or games that really kind of brought that to the forefront. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And it's crazy thinking about it too, because I like to, as you all know, read about old games, read about old game systems and how those things were sort of played. And maybe I haven't played them necessarily. I've had the pleasure to play games on Atari and, Magnavox Odyssey and stuff like that. But some of these older consoles, like, they didn't even have proper artifacts on the screen to play games with. In fact, some old games, old game systems required you to put an overlay on your television and a small white dot would be what you would use to play said game, whatever it was, whether it was like tic-tac-toe and little dots would show up. But if you didn't have the overlay, they would just be dots on the screen and they wouldn't make any sense. So the fact that that's how gameplay started is kind of intense. And, once we kind of evolved into arcade type games and home consoles in general. I mean, look at the Atari with Pong, right? Yeah, that was essentially the first instance of a sport as a game. And from there, it's just been entirely crazy as we've played more and more games. New and interesting things have been introduced. And at this point in my life, it's kind of, you kind of take it for granted, right? Imagine not having something like saving, which didn't exist until like the Super Nintendo, for example.
Yeah. Blows my mind.
It's absolutely crazy though, man.
I completely forgot when I was at a friend's house the other day, we were playing the Nintendo 64, and it's been a while since I had my hands on one and actually like used it myself. But you know, if you need to restart the game, you just turn it off, turn it back on, or press the reset button. Like, there's no menu system that you go back to. There's no, you know, click here to restart in the menu. It's literally a physical motion of the hardware to restart and open it up again. It's like, man, that's fascinating. So what are some let's start with a mechanic that is the most for you has changed games the most. Like, is there something that stands out to you that has been added in games that you either we take for granted or you're just like, I don't know how I ever live without that?
Yeah, regenerative health.
Regenerative health.
That's a big one.
I feel like Halo.
Oh, dude.
I mean, that was Halo.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the fact that it kind of made it a little bit easier for people to jump in and play, too.
Right.
I mean, you think about health before that, right? You had, like, Wolfenstein, health
Pick
packs.
Pick up health packs.
Sometimes you didn't even have health packs.
Like, yeah, jumping back into that, and especially the newer ones, like, I had to relearn it, you know? Like, I'm not used to that, you know?
Yeah, like, Wolfenstein, like, some games still have health packs, right? Which is kind of cool.
Right.
But... you know, even things like shields and stuff that didn't exist for a while.
Right.
The thing for me, that as far as regenerative health and just health in general, the thing that comes to mind for me is Mega Man.
Yeah.
And I mean, some games didn't even have health. Like Contra, you got hit and you died. Like that was it. And you had lives, which was your health, basically.
Yeah. Right.
It's crazy that now there's so many different ways that health even has. Like, there's so many levels. There's shields. There's, you know, armor. Health.
Technically, Halo 1 was regenerative shield, not regenerative health, because they did have health packs to recharge your health bar.
Yeah. It's like a crazy...
But did GoldenEye have regenerative health?
No.
You had to
get health packs.
Okay. Yeah. I remember now.
There were shields too, so remember it was the watch had the red on the left and the blue on the right. That was
That's right. And you had lives too, right?
Yeah, you had lives as well. Right. Or you failed the mission actually if you died.
Right. It's crazy. But
you couldn't even restart at that point. Like, you'd have to start the mission over and just say mission failed, dead, or KIA, or whatever it was.
Well, that's another thing, like checkpoints. Like, having checkpoint moments in games where there's still games today that go back to the olden ways where you have to get through an entire level to succeed. But, like, there were times where if you got 75, 80% of the way through the level, you had to start back from zero, back to being the mission.
Right.
And that sucked. And that's when I hated games and threw my controller down and stopped playing. I was like, no, can't do this. Not about that.
It's absolutely crazy, man. And then as far as mechanics that we take for granted, I mean, saving it at this point in our lives, it's like, why the hell wasn't that always there? And in reality, it wasn't even like something that could happen because the cartridge just didn't have that ability.
Yeah, just I guess Zelda, it was a memory issue maybe, I wonder?
Probably. Yeah. And just having that internal clock, I think, was another thing. But I believe Zelda, the gold cartridge, like the original Legend of Zelda, was the first one to have it. And I may be wrong on that, but you know, I can't even imagine a life without it. I think about Mega Man even, and Mega Man came after that. You know, Mega Man had codes, where that was basically like a 4x4 grid, and you'd have to put in a code, and it would revert the game to a game state based on that code. So depending on how much health you still had remaining, how many shields you had, what power ups you had, what bosses you beat, all of the different codes exist. So you can put in a random code and it would give you a game state. Like, oh, hey, you killed all the bosses but have no health left, so you're about to jump into a boss and like immediately die or something like that. So it's crazy how all of that's kind of evolved, and that's only one part of it, right? Saving and health they're very basic items in the game, but
I think everyone takes it for granted now, like especially autosave. Like, I don't remember last time I actually had to save, you know? It's like a second thought.
Well, or it's Monster Hunter World, you have to save.
Yes.
Like, it kind of stinks for some of the smaller things, you know?
Right.
But that one is intense. I think the other one for me that's pretty huge, and I guess this came about when RPGs started to get really big, like in the Baldur's Gate area, but inventories and like management of inventory, there's so many small quality of life things that have happened with inventory. Like, not only the ability to just have a bunch of items and then use them, but auto sorting inventories or automatically having your bag or your backpack or whatever send stuff to an inventory box or something like
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I can't even think about how that came to be. Like, some games don't even have inventories now, which is, you know.
Yeah. Like choice, even, obviously. You know, things like Skyrim and stuff like that, where you have so much stuff and not having a filtering option to through things. Mm-hmm. Like, that gets incredibly frustrating. That's why I never played MMOs, is because there was so much inventory management I had to deal with. And you'd have your, I remember playing like Diablo and stuff like that, where you get items that you use to craft. Do they have crafting in Diablo?
I'm not sure. I actually haven't played a Diablo
diligently. So. I just know I would get items and sell them if I didn't need them.
I mean, like, I guess World of Warcraft then. Like, there was crafting and things like that, where you pick up all these resources and stuff that were all part of the inventory with everything else. And I was like, man, this is really frustrating and time consuming. And I'm an orderly person. I like to have things like in the right place and everything. Like, the colors have to match, and like, this has to go here. And if it doesn't, like, it's just annoying.
Right.
So
loadouts is something that's more recent, I feel like.
That's true.
You'd have different, you know, armor loadouts, especially in WoW. Like, that's like the first game I saw that had that. Where does it carry over? I guess with technically Monster Hunter, you kind of have that, but you just kind of like mix and match what you want. But they have like full armor sets that you can pick if you want that, with buffs and stuff like that.
It's pretty intense, man. And we're talking about inventories, and those are details now in a game. Some games you couldn't even move. Like, it was just, you know, you were a paddle on a screen. Like, at what point? Probably adventure, right? Where you actually had an avatar that you'd move across a screen. And I forgot what they're called. I know Homestar Runner calls them Fuhuhu gods. They're like these little, and you can look it up if you want. They're in adventure, there's monsters that look like seahorses with bellies. And if you get eaten by one, you die. Like, that's it. Like, the game's over. And it doesn't reset, right? Because back in the day, like, they were just old ass games. And you'd essentially just like trek across the screen looking for keys to different rooms. And the only enemy I don't know what they're called. I guess they're called like dinosaurs or something. Homestar Runner calls them Fuhuhu gods, or Strong Bad calls them Fuhuhu gods. And that would be like the first instance of moving across the screen. And now if you can't move in a game, like, what game is it? Like, there's movement in every single game of some kind, maybe except for text adventures like Undertale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Undertale is really cool though.
It is a good one.
I like
it. What else? I mean,
well, one of my favorites was the Arkham scanning abilities to detective mode. Like,
that's a good, like, just that, scanning in general.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, most recent one they use it in was, well, actually most games have it now, like in some form or fashion. Like, doesn't Monster Hunter even have it in some way?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess in, you know, the color, the glowing things, or the scatter flies.
You're tracking. Oh yeah, the scatter flies. That's right.
Like, those are kind of like a detective mode deal, you know. And you got the tracks that glow on the ground and everything.
Andromeda did it, where you could pull up your, I don't even know what you call it, your scanner on your arm, and look at like a screen that shows you tracks as well.
Yeah,
which is funny to think like that's like now a common thing that video games use. Can you imagine if some of these games like copyrighted this stuff and no one else could ever use them?
I wonder if people do have that. I'm sure there's a lot of those patents that exist out there, like for certain game mechanics, and maybe they're getting like a boatload of money or something like that. That
probably
aren't aware of. Like for me, I look at open world games and how, like, when those were first brought to light, I mean, like, we used to have linear pathways and stuff like that. And then they were like, let's have an open world. Well, how do you navigate this open world? Let's throw a map in there. Well, now you have this map. Like, what is the concept of the map? Like, is it just a map, or can you zoom in and out of it? How's that going to work? And then they started adding like waypoints and things that you can filter through. And then now you have a problem of too much shit on the screen. It's like, how do you filter that out?
How can't I come up with the term? So you can quick
fast
jump
travel?
To fast travel, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was pretty much
fast travel is awesome. Yeah.
Oh, what would I do without that?
You couldn't do that in the Ocarina of Time, could you? You had to actually travel with your horse?
You could do the Song of the Wind or the Song of Soaring or whatever.
That's right.
That would take you places.
Okay.
I think it's in the last place. There was also, technically, fast travel was done with Faroor's Wind, which would take you to wherever you did it last. So if I did Faroor's Wind in, you know, the Light Dungeon or the Light Temple, I could go to the Dark Temple and just do it again, and boom, take me back. That also kind of relates to sort of the tower mentality too, right? Because you can fast travel to those places in games like, Or like Legend of Zelda, Assassin's Creed, Shadow of Mordor, and that also kind of delves into the whole open world aspect, like revealing new parts of a map. And then the other thing is maps. Like, what, since how long have we had maps? And really, what games required maps before maps were necessary? I guess maybe The Legend of Zelda would be the first one that had a map that I can think of.
Yeah.
And surely there's others, like, you know, games that we don't really think of off the top of our heads.
Yeah, I think Pokemon, the Game Boy ones, had maps too.
Yeah, they had,
like,
some.
Not like they had great maps detail in there, but yeah. I don't know. I can't think any far back than The Legend of Zelda.
That's good, man.
Yeah.
Even crazier. Thinking about jumping wasn't a mechanic in a game until Jumpman in Donkey Kong.
Oh my gosh,
isn't that crazy? Like,
that's so weird.
Like, a score, like, when was score a thing that people added into a game? I guess Pong would have score,
right?
But like, I'm talking about a score that had high scores. Like, what was the first high score? I don't fucking know.
Yeah,
man.
Climbing, like climbing over walls.
Well, yeah,
like,
remember, PUBG recently, yeah, we can actually climb
remember,
our vaults over
remember
stuff.
Back in Battlefield 2, whenever they had like jumping and stuff like that, and you went up to a wall and jump, every time you jump over a wall, it would like kind of glitch out and you couldn't actually get over the wall very well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was super frustrating.
Yeah.
And then they added like climb animations that you could actually see yourself jump over the wall. That made a big difference. Or, you know, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but things that allow you to jump on the sides, like the mechanic of being able to climb up the side of a building and stuff like that. Assassin's Creed, is that the first one
that had what?
That had like the ability to just like run up to a wall and just start climbing up the side of a building.
I don't think so. No, because you could do that. You could do that. Well, that didn't necessarily work. It had to be a climbable mountain. I guess Zelda would be the one that lists.
Not mountain, everything. But like just
like
just things
stuff
in general. Like to be able to have a free form to climb. Like you used to be able to climb a ladder, but this one allowed you to climb every building
lets
in the
you do
city.
Whatever you wanted. The Spider-Man game, like after
yeah,
after
that's
the movie,
true.
That'd
yeah,
be
with
like
the web
early
and stuff
2000.
Like that.
I think that came just before Assassin's Creed, or at the same time. There was also around that time, like Prince of Persia, probably had stuff like that. Climbing walls, that is a good one though, like just climbing stuff that's around.
Yeah, so before that it was like, I mean, literally you had to find a ladder and then that was what you climb up, or stairs or whatever. But now like I remember in Assassin's Creed being able to, I just spent hours upon hours just climbing up on this thing or climbing up onto this pole that would let me jump and jump and jump to then get to the top of the tower and then jumping from building to building,
right?
Just that freedom to move around in so many ways.
Yeah,
was it's really great. Exciting.
Yeah. One that I don't think any of us would think of, burning grass. And the first time I saw this was in Far Cry 2. We can just like throw fire and Molotovs or a flamethrower and just literally burns so cool. The grass. It just goes out for miles and kills like everything in its path. Like that was just like, what?
That's interesting.
I would do that all the time.
I think you could do that. I think if you shot a fire arrow in the grass in Zelda, it would burn it.
Yeah, yeah.
What the hell?
Why does Zelda do everything?
Oh, I have no idea.
I think so. I don't
guess
remember.
Zelda was the first for everything.
Seriously.
Well,
they did some impressive stuff.
I'd say if you haven't played like one of the original Zeldas, just play A Link to the Past.
Yeah.
And the thing, that thing is freaking flawless, man. Like if you're enjoying, I know Austin right now you're playing the Owlboy and stuff. I know those are side scrollers, but top down Zelda games are incredible, man.
If it came to the Switch, man, I'd buy it in a heartbeat.
I bet you it will.
It probably will, yeah.
When that Nintendo Online service comes out.
I need to get me an SNES Classic to play some of these things, man. Really appreciate them.
Oh, I need that so bad.
But
my coworker won't let me buy it off of him. He's got it like sitting on his desk at work. I want
it. My brother bought the one like for Europe, like the old school, like the Famicom one. Oh, it's so pretty, man.
That's
so
awesome.
There's other mechanics out there that...
Ooh, you know, I got a good one. Bullet time with like Max Payne.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh shit, I forgot about that. One.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like Fear had that too.
That's a good one, man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Bullet time is cool. I like bullet time in Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
When you could just slow it down and just like click, 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 pop, 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 and just hit people in the head. I'd always see like whenever you get more leveled up, you can do it like 12 times.
Dang,
so I'd unload a clip into some dude's head. I'm like, he's already dead after the first one. I'm just gonna do the rest of him anyway. Just because I could.
Fear 2 had it too.
Yeah.
Kind of had its own bullet time.
Fear 1 had it as well, I think. I think that was part of the appeal of that game was having the bullet time effects with the characters. I like destructible environments. That's my shit right there. Being able to tear stuff up. Like, I mean, Dig Dug, from my research, Dig Dug was one of the first ones, but it was just like polygons that you were erasing off the screen as mm-hmm. you're moving around.
Well, that was like a gameplay mechanic, though, yeah, not just like a feature. You
yeah,
know?
It was. It wasn't a visual aesthetic. It was like mm-hmm. this is a integral part of this game. But it's cool whenever they started making it in like shooters and stuff like that, where you used to be able to duck. Like, I remember playing the first Call of Duty and I would duck behind a sandbag, and like sandbags you can pierce through, but mm-hmm. in Call of Duty, they were literally solid things you couldn't shoot through. And then when they made it to where you could actually shoot through a sandbag and hit people or blast through a wall and kill a guy on the other side because the wall was like made of, you know, plaster versus heavier materials, that was pretty intense.
Was it Red Faction? We could literally destroy everything.
Yeah, Red Faction, you could destroy the entire world. It was awesome.
Dude, I wonder what game introduced aiming down sights, like actual sights, though, not like GoldenEye 007 where you had the little yeah. reticle that you would like move around, because that was like the first yeah. sight, right?
True.
That was Call of Duty.
I think Call of Duty.
Well, like, and I'm talking Iron Sights. I'm not talking like, because, like, right. for example, Turok, you could zoom in and like you had a scope, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess Call of Duty had Iron Sights in that one. But did Medal of Honor have Iron Sights? Maybe that was the first one. Medal of Honor Allied Assault.
Maybe. That's another good one. Like, that's a huge mechanic in games now.
Probably this Fog of War.
Fog of War.
Yeah,
yeah. Fog of War and RTS and stuff like that. Yeah.
And then RTSs too, man.
So good.
Whoever did the first axonometric game like that, probably Diablo, maybe, where that, like, in that general kind of vein of games, first top down, like isometric RPG type game. What else? Like, what?
Possibly Operation mechanics? Flashpoint or Metal Gear Solid 2 with aiming down the sights.
Yeah. Viet Cong is also on here too.
Metal Gear Solid 2. That's right. Because Metal Gear, the original, came out in 99, or I think it was 99.
Right.
My God, that feels... That's 20 years ago. My God, dude. Yeah. We're old as
shit. About when you can actually pause the game? Like,
pausing is good.
What do you call it? Mass Effect, stuff like that. I don't know what was before that, where you could actually pause games. I know BioWare's...
What do you mean, pause games?
Well, like, you could pause the action and then, like, tell your characters to do stuff.
Oh, I don't know about that. That's, like, very specific.
Yeah. I don't know what you actually call that.
I guess it's like... in a turn-based
probably,
game.
Yeah, that sounds like a... It'd have to be a really early strategy game that right. That's very specific.
I would think games like like Civilization stuff. Isn't Civilization turn-based?
Well, yeah, like probably the first Civ, or like, I don't know, maybe there was like a Sid Meier's Other or something else. Like, I forget that's a Sid Meier game.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Sid Meier, also Pirates.
Yeah.
I still haven't played that. I need to. Think of what else. Like, what game mechanics, like favorite game mechanics?
Quick time?
Did we just say? Quick time events. I guess these, like, can we get into, like, ones that we don't really like?
Yeah.
How about we talk about mechanics that aren't good?
Okay. Yeah.
Let's like do quick time events. I don't really like quick time.
Okay.
I think helps. Yeah, yeah. I think it helps if the story is what matters. Like, I understand that people are like, quick time and Spider-Man. Like, I can understand where that stings, but if I'm just trying to get from A to B, and then at least there's some part of the quick time that I can control, I think it's okay.
It definitely can be abused, especially in the Telltale games. Like, look, I'm tired of, like, having... I want to watch this or I want to play this. Like, don't make it where I'm just switching back and forth.
Yeah, it's... I think it's necessary, but...
Yeah.
I'm glad that it's not, like, save that has to be ubiquitous, right? Across all games.
Right.
Or maps. Like, imagine every game was like, you have to have QuickTime events.
I have a great gameplay mechanic that is the worst thing in the world.
What?
Loot boxes, microtransactions. Loot boxes. I mean, it's just like.
I mean, I kind of like that.
Loot boxes are good in Overwatch, I guess. Yeah. Microtransactions, that's a bad mechanic. Boom.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately one of those bad ones that has to stay.
Yeah.
And that's going to forever.
So frustrating.
At least, like.
I also do think, like, on the tower conversation, that is starting to get annoying with me. Like, having a, like, what, like, an Ubisoft game specifically, like, that's such a trope for them where you have to go find a tower, climb to the top of the tower, and then you reveal part of the map. That drives me nuts. I mean, like, it's something to do, but it's not something I want to do.
Right. It was cool at first, but now it's like, okay, we just need to move on from this. Done it too many times. I don't like durability, especially in Breath of the Wild.
Oh, dude, that sucks.
Like,
climb these walls and then you slip down them when it's raining. Understandable, makes sense from an environmental perspective. It's just annoying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, I think it should stay. but there needs to be a way around it, kind of.
I throw a sword like 10 times and it's like, oh, it breaks. You have to find something else. Right. I'm like, damn it.
See, I don't mind when you can repair.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think repairing things makes sense.
Yeah.
It is a little time consuming, can get annoying, but you can't do it in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. That's part of the challenge, I guess. It's part of what makes it
what difficult. About the point where you can't save and you have to complete something? Just have to do it over and over again.
Yeah. Like roguelikes, stuff like that, where you have to keep, you know, you have to finish.
Yeah, roguelikes are interesting. A lot of people really, 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 really enjoy them.
Yeah.
I like them, but after some time, I'm like, I understand this changes every time, but I like some sort of progression that makes me feel better. Like, whether it's, oh, I got to the 10th level, so now I unlock this new part or something like that. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
That's not so bad. Not so bad.
This isn't necessarily a gameplay mechanic, but I think it's interesting to talk about. Patches to games.
Ooh, well, thank you, internet.
Yeah.
What was like? What was the first? Can you look that up really quick?
Yeah.
What was the first ever game patch? Like, that
yeah.
was put like sent out. It had like, to have been on the original Xbox 360, probably.
Probably.
I think Xbox was too early.
I wonder if PlayStation 2 had it because they had that network adapter for a little bit that they brought out, but I don't know if it ever allowed any updates to the software.
No, it'd have to be the first like console that
allowed you to have a hard drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on. What was the first ever game? Oh, I guess PCs would probably have game patches.
That's true. They did. Yeah.
So probably back in the 90s.
When Steam came out, there was patches early on.
This is from the Guinness World Records. The first console game to receive a downloadable patch was Unreal Championship on the Xbox.
Oh, no shit. Wow.
Yeah.
That's funny. Cool.
So when did Xbox Live come out then?
Well, Live came out then.
Oh, it was like,
but it wasn't like required. Now, like, you almost have to be connected to the internet all the time to do anything, which makes sense. Like, if you don't have internet, like, you probably shouldn't be.
It was a small software update patch that was issued to address performance issues with the game. Because back then, I guess you would just, there would be fucking bugs and you would have to get around them somehow, you know?
Or just live with them.
Your game
plus games were more complete back then.
Yeah.
True.
That makes a lot of sense.
There was some game that came out a long time ago that had like a game breaking bug. Like it was a cult classic game, but it never made hit critical. Cheetah Men? Anybody play that?
Cheetah Men?
I don't think so.
What was that on?
I'm going to find out right now.
The
Cheetah Men was on the Nintendo Internet Entertainment System. It was part of the multi-cart Action 52 something something. It came out in 1991. And I believe it had a component in it where it basically stopped working about 75% through the game. But people love the game.
Hmm.
But it wouldn't work for a while. But I know a guy who knows a guy who was bringing this game back and did a Kickstarter and got funded because there were so many people that really enjoyed the game. But yeah, it was on one of those multi-packs where you could get 100 games on one disc or on one console cartridge. And pretty wild.
I don't like survival mechanics. Well, the ones where you have to eat every so often, drink and sleep and get cold. I'm like, dude,
that's frustrating.
I just want to play this game. Like, I eat for health.
A few of them is fine. I think like if you have to, so like I'm playing Dragon Quest Builders and I like that there's your typical health, but if you get hungry, like in general, like your energy bar goes down. Like I'm okay with that because you rest and it goes all the way back up. But it's like nice to have to keep that up because if not, then the moment to moment can get just kind of a little bit stale. It just kind of adds another level on top of that.
It's good. I think it works for Monster Hunter.
Ooh, I think stamina is necessary too. I actually am okay with stamina.
Yeah, I'm okay with stamina.
Understandably, dude, I can't even walk up some stairs, like let alone run across an entire field. And
we were talking about that today. We were like, oh my gosh, two flights of stairs. We're like, oh, this is so much crampy, work. I need to go work out. But anyway, cool. Well, let's wrap this up because we're hitting time here.
We've definitely
missed a lot. But the crazy thing is there's been so many different games and gameplay in general has just evolved so much and it's still changing.
Yeah.
Like, there's VR. Like, we didn't even talk about that. Like,
what other
gameplay mechanics could we like realistically see in the next few years or even this year?
That'd be an interesting round two discussion where we just sit here and talk about future mechanics that we could come up with and dream up based on experiences and stuff. Yeah.
Either next week or soon after, I think it'd be kind of cool to talk about like, ooh, who revolutionized the way people play games, right? Like we could talk about like the Super Nintendo. We could talk about like the L&R buttons, the X and Y buttons, like stuff like that. That'd be cool. But
anyway,
gameplay, man.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's king.
Dude.
It's king.
Love games.
Well, that's going to wrap up our discussion topic this week. If there's a topic you want to hear us talk about, please let us know at hello@theinnergamer.net. And also, don't forget, there will not be a video this week at youtube.com/innergamer, but you should still go check it out for all of our other videos that are really awesome and exciting. Like, subscribe, sign up for all that stuff. It's really cool. And yeah, stay tuned. We're going to be coming right back with our video game releases and closing out the podcast.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. We have three games that are releasing next week. Three games that are very exciting.
Yeah.
Three games that are coming out in a span of 5 days. On March 23rd, we have two games on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. The much anticipated two-player co-op shooter, A Way Out, is coming. It is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. Split-screen co-op mechanics. You buy one game, your friend can play with you without buying that game.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How does that work?
It's magic. Cool. Magic. It's got to be on the same console, but yeah, still cool.
Makes sense.
Also on the 23rd, we have on PS4 and PC, Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom.
Ah, so stylized. So Japanese. So great. The first Ni No Kuni is on PS3, I believe.
Okay.
And yeah, doesn't exist on PS4. Maybe you can like stream it or something now, but if there was one RPG that I've been wanting to play for a long time, it's this one, man.
Really?
It looks so cool. It's like a mix of Dragon Quest and, you know, like a Miyazaki film, basically.
Yeah.
Did you play they have like cutscenes and stuff, huh?
Did you play the first one?
No, I didn't play it. Oh, okay. I was saying, like, if I have the opportunity, I definitely want to. But I've been hearing about this forever. The guys over kind of funny. I've been talking about it for a while, too.
Really?
Colin wants to play this game, too.
Yeah. Charlie, one of our other guys, he's talks about the first one like very highly, so I'm really excited to play this.
Yeah, it's very story based, very very cool, and you should check it out if you get the opportunity.
Yep. And then March 27th,
the one we don't care about.
What?
Dude, I care about it.
I'm excited. PS4, Xbox One, PC, Far Cry 5.
Three.
It is here. It's going to have a single player campaign that you can play with your friend. Cooperative through the entire game.
What?
And there's gonna be DLC where you can kill zombies, you can fight aliens, you can also go to Vietnam. So that's pretty sweet. So
I've always wanted to go to Vietnam.
Me too. Be cool. I like to go get some pho and
some pho
and enjoy the life.
My
out
friend
there
lives in Vietnam.
Really?
Right now, yeah.
Nice. Let's go visit him.
He's a teacher.
That's awesome.
And I miss him really bad.
Marsh,
I'm going to tell you to listen to this podcast so you can hear me say these exact words. I miss you, bud. And I miss everybody else, just like I miss Devin, who's not going to be able to say this next part. But Brett.
Yes. That's going to wrap up our show this week, everybody. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend.
Guys, we also have a Patreon set up, which is a way for you, our listeners, to donate to us so we can bring you all the great content you want to see and hear. $1 a month will help us keep this content coming to you each and every week. $1 a month, $2 a month. I mean, we prefer $1,000 a month. I don't think that's too much to ask. What do you think, Brett?
No, it's not bad.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if not, pennies. If you support us, we have some awesome rewards. I mean, at $1,000, you can, I don't know, take my car, maybe.
Yeah.
Brett's car.
Yeah.
It's a really nice car. Ford Taurus. Beautiful.
Ford Fusion.
We have some awesome rewards if you do decide to donate. Being a guest on the podcast, getting exclusive content sent over to you early. So head on over to theinnergamer.net, click donate to contribute. Guys, my name is Luis Gonzalez.
I'm Brett Janoski.
And I'm Awesome Morales.
And you've been listening to
The Inner Gamer!
South by Southwest edition.
Kevin's gonna love that.
Shut it down.
You can always cut before that.
You should have been like, Devin.
Yeah. Like, you're terrible.
Face is terrible.
The Inner Gamer!
South by Southwest edition.
I just hear like metal.
I don't know.
See, if there was a video of this, we could put like an explosion behind us.
That'd
like,
be awesome.
You push a button and like do some James Bond stuff.
That'd be South pretty sick. Our discussion this week is going to be on innovative gameplay mechanics. Because gameplay is a big part
king.
Of video games.
It's king.
We're not going to do welcome.
Why?
Oh, yeah. It's not a video. I forgot.
God damn it, Austin. You fucked it up.
I fucked it up.
You fucked it up.
See, when we go outside of our norms, I just like, I don't know what's going on anymore.